Welcome to the Kitchen Counter Podcast, episode 112, Smorgasbord, April 2018. Everybody, thank you so much for downloading and listening to this episode of the show. I am Roger, your host, and this is the podcast that's all about home cooking, getting in the kitchen, having more fun, learning new things, spending time with family, friends, all that good stuff. I'm really happy you're here today. I got a great smorgasbord episode lined up for you. I have several topics I want to talk about. And if you're new to the show, first of all, welcome. But if you're not familiar with these occasional smorgasbord episodes that I do, it's where I don't necessarily have a dedicated topic for the entire episode. Rather, I have several shorter things I want to talk about that didn't really warrant their own episode. So I'm going to hit a few different things today. And actually on the list today for me to cover, I want to talk a little bit about some recent articles in the popular media that have come out about food safety. I just want to touch on that very briefly. We're going to talk a little bit about asparagus since we're deep into asparagus season through most of North America right now. We're going to touch on hot sauce, and we're going to wrap it up with a little bit of an additional commentary about meal kits. All right. One note before I get too far into this. If you hear strange noises coming from the background, my son is in the other room acting out some pretty epic Pokemon battles, and I can hear all sorts of crazy sound effects coming out of him. So if you hear that, don't worry. It's not your ears or your cat. It's probably my son pretending he's Pikachu. Now, everything I talk about that I think I have a link for or additional information on, I am going to put in the show notes for this episode over at KitchenCounterPodcast/112. There you can get the show notes for this episode. And by the way, if you're interested in getting in touch with me, and I'm going to be talking about a couple of listeners who have done just that in this episode a little later on, you are more than welcome to send me an email to feedback@kitchencounterpodcast.com. I love hearing from you, even if it's just to say hello, or if you have questions or ideas for future show topics, I'd love to hear it. Again, feedback@kitchencounterpodcast.com. I read and respond to all the email I get. You can also find me less often over at the Facebook site, which is facebook.com/kitchencounterpodcast, and over on Twitter @TKCpodcast. Now, right before I get into this first topic, which is the recent stories about food safety and health concerns, I want to mention a quick thing about my friend Nick Haskins. He's got a show called The Restaurant Podcast, and he does a home cooking style show as well. And he also kind of weaves in an occasional review on restaurant food. He does some fun random ingredient challenges. And I haven't listened to it yet, but I think he just started his new season. And he mentioned on Twitter, he is talking about my roasted tomato soup recipe that I shared eons back. I'll try to find the link for it and put it in the show notes. But why even bother with my link? Just head over to Nick's show, which is over at Restaurant Pod. That's RestaurantPod. Podbean.com. And again, I'll put the link to his webpage in the show notes over at kitchencounterpodcast.com/112. So Nick, thanks for the shout out over there. I really appreciate it. All right, everybody, let's get to it. Let's jump right in to our smorgasbord episode for April 2018. Oh, you know what else I forgot to mention right at the beginning before I hit my little bumper sound to transition over to this segment is, if you know how I do the smorgasbord episodes, you know I always try to do some sort of a giveaway in the smorgasbord episodes, and I usually wait until the end, but I think let's just get it right out there right now so you don't have to listen to the whole podcast. I am giving away a cookbook for this episode called Sheet Pan Suppers, 120 Recipes for Simple, Surprising, Hands-Off Meals Straight from the Oven by Molly Gilbert. I love roasting vegetables. I love roasting things in the oven. I love the idea of cooking entire meals on little more than one sheet pan. If you want an awesome cookbook that has tons of good dinner recipes and ideas for breakfast, desserts, and other fun things you can make in the oven on your sheet pan, you definitely want to get a hold of a copy of Sheet Pan Suppers. I'll put the link to this in the show notes. However, if you're interested in entering the contest to win a free paperback copy of the cookbook, head over to kitchencounterpodcast.com/contest for the details and the link. The bottom line is, I did this last time. I'm doing it again. I'm running it through an Amazon giveaway. So as long as you have an Amazon.com account, I think it has to be in the United States, but I'm not 100% certain about that. You can enter. There's no purchase necessary. And then at the end of the giveaway period, Amazon will randomly draw a winner out of everyone who entered. They'll just go ahead and ship the book straight to you. Now, there is a time limit for the giveaway. You have until midnight Pacific time on April 22nd. So that's a week from today, Sunday, April 22nd. As long as you can get over to kitchencounterpodcast.com/contest, you can grab the link and get over and enter to win Sheet Pan Suppers. Excellent cookbook, highly recommended. So take a second to make a note of that, or just pause and run over there right now and enter. All right, let's get into the topics now. First thing I wanted to talk about today was what feels like a rash of food stories that have been coming out lately in the popular media in the last few weeks. I know this kind of goes on all year round, but for whatever reason, I've just been really tuned into it lately, and it seems like there's been a lot of it coming out. A few weeks ago, probably a month ago by now, you've probably, unless you live under a rock, you probably heard about the ruling that came out of California requiring vendors of coffee to warn consumers of its potential link, it contains a carcinogen. So they need to warn consumers in California that coffee contains a potential carcinogen. I'm not sure what the legal language of the warning has to be, but that's what it boils down to. Then, about a week or two ago from this episode, from the date I'm recording this, we had that annual, food fright fest. I like to call the Dirty Dozen. Certainly you've heard about this because it's publicized like crazy in the popular media. This is a publication that's put out by the Environmental Working Group, which is a nonprofit. I don't have their mission statement right in front of me, but their name probably says it all. And the goal of this Dirty Dozen list is to highlight the top 12 offenders when it comes to fruits and vegetables for pesticide residue. So they take USDA data and testing data, and then they tell you, oh, these are the 12 fruits and veggies that have the highest pesticide residues. And then finally, I haven't even gotten into this very deeply. I just saw a headline, I think on CNN or somewhere like that, about how having one alcoholic drink a day may shave years off of your life. So lots of interesting stories coming out. I've talked about stuff like this before in the show, in past episodes, and I don't want to go into a lot of detail, and I certainly don't want to get my step stool out and climb up on my soapbox today. But, you know, what I really want to say is when you, and this echoes what I've said in the past, when you see kind of sensationalized stories that have to do with food and health studies and things like that, you really have to take all of these with a grain of salt. Don't take them for face value. Don't freak out. Don't get worried about what you're reading. Most of the time, much more sensationalized than they are, than is warranted. I'm not saying that there might not be some validity and truth and data and evidence behind some of these, but in many cases, there isn't much. It could be a very tentative study that, you know, we tested 10 people and we found some sort of an association between this food and this health outcome or something like that. I did a whole episode once called Don't Fear Your Food, just kind of noting that there's so much of this noise out there that when it just comes out from the popular media like this, it just gets cannonballed out to us, shotgunned out to us, whatever you want to say. It's really hard to parse kind of what you should or shouldn't be eating. I mean, everybody remembers, if they're of any age, you know, eggs are good for you. Then 5 years later, eggs are bad for you. Then 5 years later, eggs are great for you. And, you know, it's this back and forth, you know, wine is, you shouldn't drink wine. And then a glass of wine every day, a red wine every day is good for your heart. And now we've got the drinking alcohol every day might shave years off your life. So I don't even want to go through and address each of these articles specifically and what I think about each one of them. To be brief, I'll say out of the three I mentioned, the one that really gives me pause and I want to look into deeper is the alcohol, the daily alcoholic drink and decreasing lifespan. That one actually, just from a cursory glance, looks like it may actually be a study of quite a large population of individuals. But again, I don't know the details on it. Anyway, I know it seems like a bit of a cop out that I'm not going to go in and talk about each one of these in detail, but I put links up for the coffee and cancer link and the Dirty Dozen list. I put some links up in the show notes that give you maybe a not so sensationalized view and maybe a little more rational view of those items. So again, not going into a lot of detail on those, but just head over to the show notes and take a look at those articles. And don't worry so much about what you're eating. It's much better to eat lots of fruits and veggies than it is to worry about trace amounts of pesticides that are well below harmful levels than, you know, avoiding fruits and vegetables altogether. All right, that was a bit of a ramble. Let's go on to the next topic. I want to talk about asparagus because most of North America is right smack dab, either at the beginning or right in the middle of asparagus season. And this is exciting because I really, really think asparagus is an underrated vegetable. And it's also one of the easiest vegetables to prepare and enjoy. So I thought I'd take a couple of minutes and just go through some tips and ideas for using asparagus. So first things first, how do you pick your asparagus? Well, if you're in a location where it's in season, picking it is very easy. Just look for asparagus that is a nice shade of, it could be anywhere from a deep, vibrant green to more of a pale green to where the tips, the little, the ends with the little, the furled up leaves, it looks like a little spear, might even have a pinkish or a purplish hue to it. But the point being, you want your asparagus to look vibrant, not wilty, not desiccated, or, you know, where it's kind of getting soft and wrinkly. That's not good asparagus. You want nice and smooth and firm stalks on your asparagus. And I like to look for asparagus that's thinner. Thinner asparagus comes from a younger asparagus plant, and they tend to be a little more delicate in flavor and certainly more tender in texture. The thicker diameter asparagus comes from an older plant, and it's perfectly fine, but it tends to be a little bit more woody or a little more tough in the stalk. So the thinner, skinnier asparagus is typically more tender. Now, when you get your asparagus home, you want to use it probably the day you buy it, if not the day you buy it, if you keep it wrapped up in your crisper drawer within a day or two. I would say after that, it's going to start softening up, and it's not going to be really at the top of its game. And when you go to prep asparagus, understand that asparagus is grown in a sandy soil, so it does need a good washing and rinsing off from top to bottom, because you don't want any little bits of that sandy soil left in the spears and the tips of that asparagus. And asparagus does require a little bit of prep beyond that. So I like to cut the ends, where it was harvested, you know, cut the ends off about an inch up. You can also do the trick where you take and hold an asparagus spear, you know, hold one end in your right hand, the other end, your left hand, you just kind of bend it and it will kind of snap where the stalk is most tender. That might waste a lot of asparagus. That's certainly a fine way to do it if you want the bend and snap technique. But if you don't want to waste as much, just cut off about a half an inch or so from the end of the asparagus. And if they're nice and thin, that's all you really need to do. If they're a little bit thicker, if the stalks are a little bit chunkier, you could take a vegetable peeler and peel the stalks, and that will help remove some of that woodiness. And it'll also help your asparagus cook quicker. Now, you could eat asparagus raw. It's not my favorite way to eat asparagus. So there's three other ways that I typically use asparagus that I want to share with you right now. and they're all extremely easy. My favorite way to prepare asparagus, and I think I've mentioned this at some point on the show before, is either to grill it or to broil it. And I simply toss the asparagus with a little bit of olive oil, or you can even take a brush and brush a little bit of olive oil on and sprinkle it with a little sea salt. And if you're broiling it, I just put it in a single layer on a broiler pan right under the broiler for about 5 minutes or so, maybe less, depends on what kind of level of char and color you like to get on your asparagus, but it doesn't take long. It's really the same process if you're grilling it, except of course you won't be using a broiler pan. You'll just be arranging the asparagus on your grill, hopefully perpendicular to the grill, so slats so they don't fall through. And again, if you're doing it over direct heat, it will only take a few minutes for the asparagus to char up and be ready to go. Now, if you don't like the char per se, and you don't want to mess around with the grill or the broiler, you could also do the same method, same preparation, and roast them, in which case you're going to put those on a pan in an oven that's at 425 Fahrenheit for probably about 15 minutes. Again, depending on what you like for doneness, but 15 minutes and 425 is a good baseline for roasted asparagus. So that's two simple ways to prepare it. If you're using it for something else, if you're using the asparagus in a salad or on a vegetable tray and you don't want it raw, or maybe you're even putting it in something like a risotto or a frittata and you need the asparagus to not be raw because it's not going to cook through, you could blanch the asparagus. Blanching is a process where you boil a vegetable for a certain period of time and then generally take it out and plunge it into an ice bath to stop the cooking. And what that does is it cooks the vegetable to a certain point, but it won't overcook it. By plunging it in the ice water, you stop the cooking process, so it doesn't overcook. So if you're going to do that with asparagus, you're going to need to boil some water, of course, in a pot that's big enough that you can put your asparagus down into it, right? If they're 8 or 9 inches long, they're going to need to fit in that pot. But I like to bunch up my asparagus in dozen or 14, and I take some butcher string and I tie the bundle together and leave about 8 inches of string so I can use that string to lower the bunch into the boiling water and pull it out without having to get into the water. But you just put the asparagus in some boiling water, probably about 3 minutes if they're thinner, maybe 4 or 5 minutes if they're thick stalks. You remove that from the boiling water and you plunge it into a bowl of ice water. Again, that will stop the cooking process. It'll keep nice color on the asparagus, and then your asparagus will be ready to use for other applications, like as an ingredient in a dish or just snacking on. So now is the time to get to your market, to get to the store and pick up asparagus. It's in season. It's absolutely delicious, and it's so easy to make. So if you've been shying away from the asparagus, I really encourage you to go get a bunch of it and try one of these methods and just give it a shot. It makes a really easy vegetable side dish for dinner that you can make in just a few minutes, as I mentioned. Well, I want to talk about a topic that was suggested to me, or I guess I was inspired by a listener, Mark from North Carolina, who sent me an email, and he was telling me about his hot pepper sauce making process. Now, I know it's not hot pepper season. That's more of a summer, early fall type of a season, but I was so inspired by Mark's email, I went over to the supermarket and I did pick up some peppers. And even though they're not in season anywhere near where I live, most places in the United States, you can go into a grocery store and find jalapenos and serranos and probably habanero peppers, if not even a greater variety of hot peppers. So there's always something to experiment with. And I thought I hadn't made hot pepper sauce for a long, long time. So maybe I would pick up some peppers and give it a go. I hope to do a more full-blown episode on hot peppers and probably hot sauce in the future. But I just wanted to share Mark's input. And actually, Mark was kind enough to share his favorite hot pepper sauce recipe which he said I could share with you. So again, I've put this over in the show notes at kitchencounterpodcast.com/112. And just to kind of go over quickly what Mark's method is, this makes about 3 cups. So it's a pretty big batch of hot pepper sauce. But he uses tomatoes, garlic, and habaneros with a vinegar as the main liquid. Now, he calls for Campari tomatoes. If you're not familiar with what a Campari tomato is, that's totally fine. It's probably, if you go to your market, it's probably the tomatoes on the vine. You probably see those in the tomato section where you've got 3 or 4 or 5 tomatoes connected together on the vine. If those aren't Campari tomatoes, they're close enough, and those would work just fine for the purposes here. But Mark's method essentially takes a great technique, a really good technique of taking the tomatoes, cutting them, coating them in olive oil, and then roasting them in the oven so they get a really great char, roasted flavor. And then he also does the same thing with the garlic in a skillet on the stovetop. So you're getting all these really roasted, deep, rich flavors that are going to be a really great base flavor for this hot sauce. And then essentially what he does is he brings the vinegar to a simmer in a saucepan, drops in the habaneros, and then simmers those for about 10 minutes, and then puts everything in a blender and liquefies it. So you've got a nice hot sauce, fresh pepper hot sauce ready to go. Now, depending on your blender, that might produce, I'm guessing, a thicker or a chunkier sauce. If that's not your jam, you could always pour that sauce through a fine mesh strainer and get the liquid. So it's more of a Tabasco texture. You know, Tabasco is pretty vinegary and it's pretty thin as far as consistency. Typically, if you would just liquefy all the ingredients together, you're probably going to come up with a much more saucier, like a much more ketchupy, like a thin ketchup texture. But again, you could strain that if you just wanted to get kind of the liquid in the heat. So Mark's recipe is in the show notes. So Mark, thank you so much for sharing this. You know, I guess I should share a really quick anecdote. I haven't made hot pepper sauce besides trying out Mark's recipe and a couple other hot sauce recipes here in the last couple weeks. I haven't made hot sauce for, 27 or 8 years. And I love hot food, but I can remember vividly when I was in college in the mid 90s, I went through a real hot pepper head, chili head phase. Loved everything as scorchingly hot as I could handle it. And nobody could eat what I cooked because I liked to make everything really hot. Well, I got a hold of this cookbook. I think I may even still have it. It was something about food of the Yucatan in Mexico. And there was a habanero hot sauce recipe in there. And at the time, in the mid-90s, habanero was about the hottest pepper you could find. It might have been the record holder even for the world's hottest pepper. It's been eclipsed by other much crazier, much hotter peppers. But to give you an idea, peppers are measured on a range called a Scoville measurement. And I won't explain how the number is manufactured. But to give you a relative idea, so a bell pepper would be the most mild pepper on the Scoville chart, and that would range like 0 to 15 Scoville units or something. So no heat at all. A jalapeno pepper is going to measure in somewhere around the 5,000 on the Scoville units range. And I think a habanero ranges somewhere like the 250,000 Scoville units range. So a lot hotter than a jalapeno pepper. And I know they have peppers now that have cracked the 1 million, 2 million mark. Anyway, so I'm in my cruddy little apartment in college. I have an old blender, like an old Oster blender, you know, the kind that had like the 8 buttons with all these different labels, but really the blender had 1 speed and it all did the same thing. No, if puree, whip, liquefy, chop, it all had the same result. Anyway, I go to the store, I buy all these habanero peppers and the vinegar and whatever, and I get home and I start making this hot sauce. I pile everything into the blender and I turn it on liquefy or whatever. And I blend it. I'm following the directions. I blend for a couple of minutes or whatever. I was really excited about this. I was going to brag to all my friends about how I made my own hot sauce. And there I am in my little apartment kitchen. I got the blender, turned it off, and I open up the lid and check it out. I lean over and check it out. And that's when it hit me. I mean, that's when it literally hit me. It was a vapor rose up out of the blender carafe like an evil specter. And it just sprayed me. It just like fumed, misted in my face. And I don't remember a lot from that particular moment other than shrieking, you know, trying to wipe it off my face and stumbling to the couch and like falling over on the couch. I'm sure I must have washed my face or something, but it was so painful. It was like I pepper maced myself, and I hadn't, I think, subconsciously even wanted to make hot pepper sauce since then. But thanks to Mark's great email and inspiration, I gave it another shot, and it turned out pretty good. So I'll be putting together an episode on hot pepper sauce. But the moral of that story is, when you read a recipe that calls for handling hot peppers, they mean it when they say wear gloves, don't touch your eyes after chopping or handling hot peppers. You know, don't touch any other sensitive parts of your body after handling hot peppers until you've thoroughly washed and cleaned yourself up, because the material that makes a hot pepper hot, capsaicin, is in the oil in the membrane of the pepper. It will give you a burn. So just be careful there. So Mark, thanks again for sending over the hot pepper stuff, and keep your ears peeled for a full blown hot pepper recipe. Maybe sometime this summer. A hot pepper episode, maybe in the middle of summer. All right, last topic for today's smorgasbord episode, and this is inspired by another listener. A while back, actually, I think it's been a year. I think I did this for the April 2017 smorgasbord episode. I'll put a link to it in the show notes. But one of the topics was is Blue Apron good for home cooking? And if you're not familiar, which I can't imagine you wouldn't be, Blue Apron is a subscription, not a subscription, it's a delivery meal kit service. I guess it's a subscription as well. You send them money, and then they send you boxes on whatever interval you request that has essentially all the ingredients you need to make whatever recipe they want you to make. They'll send you the recipe and literally, I guess, every ingredient you need to make it, save maybe salt, pepper, and oil or something like that. And I went on a little bit of a rant about meal kit services. I'm not going to rehash it here, but you can go back and listen to that episode. But Cliff, who's a listener from Monroe, Michigan, he sent me an email, and he said he found my comments on it interesting because he was listening to some old episodes. And I think at some point I mentioned that I got a lot of very interesting feedback from that episode. In fact, I got a lot of feedback from that little rant I did about Blue Apron, and I never really shared the feedback. I just said I got a lot of feedback. And Cliff was curious to know what kind of feedback I received. And, you know, I'm probably still not going to hash it all out here for you. Just to make a long story short, I had a lot of pro meal kit feedback, and I had a lot of feedback that agreed with me. I won't say I'm necessarily anti-meal kit, but I had a lot of folks who you know, fell all over the range of thinking Blue Apron and the like were great, all the way to they're the worst thing in the world and everywhere in between. Well, Cliff mentioned, and I hadn't thought about this because I haven't seen it myself, but Cliff mentioned that he is seeing meal kits popping up in other places. So, for example, I think he sent me a picture from his local Kroger grocery store, and they had a big display of meal kits that were branded by Kroger. So instead of sending Blue Apron money and then they send you a meal kit, you could run over to Kroger and pick one up, you know, for like $15, and it'll feed a couple of people. And it's got, I don't know if it had all or most of the ingredients you'd need to make whatever the recipe was. So the local grocery stores are getting into the meal kit act. And I think they've always kind of done that. They probably just haven't branded it this way, and they probably haven't made it quite as all-in-one as these meal kits are, right? You can go to your grocery store, your supermarket, and go to the meat counter, and you can find the beef shish kebabs with, you know, pre-made with the beef and all the veggies. I mean, that's kind of like a meal kit. You just take it home and cook it, right? But these are actually like, go home and make chicken parmesan, and then there would be a couple of chicken breasts and the tomato sauce and the parmesan cheese, you know, whatever it is for the recipe, and you could buy it there. Then Cliff also sent me a link to a story, which I'll link to in the show notes, about Walmart getting in on that action too. So Walmart is going to start offering meal kits that they make in store in the Walmarts that have a grocery section. They're going to start making meal kits that you can just pop in and pick up as well. And I'm sure more stores are going to get in on this action. So I think I mentioned in that original rant that I really see things like Blue Apron and the meal kit service is kind of a, it could fundamentally change the way a lot of home cooking is done. I've also gone on the record to say I think that services like Blue Apron have probably peaked. I don't see them growing really anymore. It's really hard for them to keep subscribers. It's really difficult for them to find new subscribers for reasons varied, I'm sure, but price and convenience, I'm sure, are a big factor of it. But I think the idea of stores going after this market, this particular need by offering their own in-store meal kits, I think that's going to eat into the Blue Aprons of the world a lot. I think that's going to be tough. That's tough competition. If I can go to the local store and get a meal kit, if I want a meal kit in the first place, I'd much rather just roll down to my local Fred Meyer, which is a Kroger brand, and pick up a meal kit than send Blue Apron, you know, $30 to get a box of ingredients and by FedEx a couple of days later or something like that. So I don't know what the future for meal kits hold, really, but I think it's fascinating that grocery stores and local providers are getting in on the action. So I will put some more thoughts about that together, and I'll also keep my eyes open. And Cliff and any other listener, I'd love to know what your thoughts and what you're noticing in your local environment on the meal kit front. I'd love to know what, kind of what's going on, if your stores are offering them as well. The other thing I'm thinking of doing, because I've gone on about Blue Apron a few times now, is maybe I should actually, this will sound funny if you hadn't listened to my other episode, maybe I should actually order some Blue Apron and give it a shot. So I know that sounds deeply hypocritical. Again, if you hadn't listened to the other episode, that I would rant about something I didn't have personal experience with. But at any rate, I think I'm going to go ahead and get two or three meals from Blue Apron just to give it a try, just so I can say I've done it and have a perspective from an actual user. And then I might come on and share my thoughts about that in the future. All right, that was a whirlwind tour through my topics for the Smorgasbord episode. Don't forget to go over to kitchencounterpodcast.com/contest before April 22nd, 2018, so you can enter the contest to get a copy of Sheet Pan Suppers, the cookbook. And again, thank you so much for tuning in and listening today. I want to remind you, if you want to get a hold of me, you can send an email over to feedback@kitchencounterpodcast.com. Head over to the show notes today to find Nick Haskins' great podcast, The Restaurant Podcast, so you can give that a listen. If you like the show and you get something out of it, I'd love it if you would tell your family and your friends to go check out the show as well. It's a great way to get new listeners into our little community here. All right, everybody, I'm not going to go on and on. I'm going to let you go so you can get in the kitchen and get your asparagus on, or your meal kits on, or whatever it is you got planned for dinner this week. So until next time, I am Roger with the Kitchen Counter Podcast. Happy cooking.